July 27th, Summer Slamboree is coming to East Paulding Middle. Doors are at 6:30. Bell time is at 7:30. Come see wrestling stars such as, you're talking about Johnny Impact, PJ Black, Kid Cash, Johnny Swinger, Heidi Katrina, and many. Oh, wait a second. I left one out. Buff Daddy himself is going to be there. It's unbelievable the talent that's going to be there. It's unreal. So get off your couch. Real simple. Put your key to your ignition. Crank your car and come get your tickets. Get out of the house. Come see us. I'm Buff and I'm Stuff.
I got JP Magnum on the line with me. We're going to try to do this thing over again. The audio, I was just telling JP off the air, was absolutely terrible. That'll probably be the last time I ever record in the kitchen ever again. So I apologize for wasting your time. I had fun talking about wrestling, though, with you.
That was great, man. I guess we can just call this take two.
Take two, yeah. Usually, it's happened before, me and Mike have recorded podcasts, had to redo it, and usually the second time over, it's a little bit better, but this time, we're not joined by your buddy, Zach Belair.
Zach Attack.
The Zach Attack, yeah, walking around with his Zach packs, or fanny packs, whatever you want to call them.
yeah.
Man, I appreciate you being on the line with us tonight. I know you're on your way to a show right now. You want to tell us a little bit about what's going on tonight?
Tonight I'll be in Morrison, Tennessee for Tennessee All-Pro Wrestling. They got a pretty strong fan base there. They go and do a weekly show. We come in when we've got an opening or whatever, and we can do a couple shows in a row. We do. If we can't, then we'll just do what we can to help out the show and go on about to the next one. So.
Oh, cool. What kind of crowd? How many people are usually at these kind of shows?
With TAP, it just depends. When they run their regular shows, they kind of run it like one of those old TV studio type buildings where,
ooh, like the USWA used to do.
Yeah, and it's like a 150 people feels like they're right on top of it.
Oh wow, that's kind of cool though.
Yeah, and it just sounds like there's a lot more. Plus, you can get more vocal with them. Going around the ring and stuff, but when they run high schools and middle schools and stuff too, when they're bigger shows, they get a pretty good turnout. But it's totally different when there's open air, open space. The crowd just kind of seems. I like the stuff when they're right on top of you.
Yeah. The crazier the crowd, the better the show usually. So, are you in a tag match tonight?
Yeah, I'm actually meeting Brian Rivers in Chattanooga and with a couple other guys, and they're going to ride up there with us. So.
Oh, cool. You've been tagging with him for a while now, right?
Yeah, when you get to this point of your career, it's a lot better to tag up with somebody, less bumps you have to get.
That's right. That's kind of like Zabisco. They make the joke online about how he was the cigar statue Indian that just stood there and made Anderson do most of the work for him.
Yeah, Brian, 7 years my junior, so I let him do most of it. So.
Cool. Well, I mean, you get the hot tag, though, right?
That's right.
Well, if you are working as baby faces, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, well, heck, I've always wanted to know, how did you get started in the business?
Well, I had a different start of the business than a lot of people did. I don't know if you ever watched All That Adam Jacobs or Toy Dotson wrestle around the area. Adam actually got to do a lot of stuff with WCW for a little bit. Did Ring of Honor when it first started.
Oh, cool, cool. So you,
No, I was going to say, you know, they got into it probably our senior year of high school. They went to Gordon Lee, I went to LaFette. And I wanted to do it, but at the same time, you know, there was school and stuff. And so I would always call them and, you know, go over things and we'd meet up. We'd, you know, I learned a little bit from them, enough to know what I was doing. I did Greco-Roman wrestling in high school anyway, so, you know, you get the basics down. And you've got friends that do it for a couple of years before you decide to. And then I guess it was probably May of 2000, Mike Rapata and a couple other people were running a show at Lebanon High School, because I went to Cumberland University to play football. And they were putting on a show, and I was helping coach the wrestling team. And somebody told them that I could wrestle, and they were like, well, good, you can wrestle the coach, put him in a match. And I was like, okay, not been formally trained, but okay. And we had a good match. The crowd was really into it because we're both coaches and stuff. And the guy was like, man, you want to work for me? I was like, and I explained to him, he goes, you go and get some more training and then start working. And that,
so you worked a match in front of a crowd with no training at all?
Well, as opposed to the little bit of training that I had with my friends, you know, and working with them, you know, in their backyard or and just hanging out in a ring with them and stuff. But no, I didn't have any.
I think that's awesome. I mean, like, that's like, you know, any wrestling fan's dream is to get in the ring and, you know, and feel the crowd and everything. But that's pretty awesome. But so he saw that performance and was like, hey, dude, you want to come work with me?
Yeah. And I kind of got lucky because the guy that I was working, when I did a stage dive out of the ring, you know, that's a lot smaller than my foot got caught on the rope, but he was there to kind of grab me and I fell out on top of him. Then I did a drop kick off the top rope and didn't know how to catch myself and busted my face really well. So, you know.
And this is probably just from watching years and being like, you know what, I can do a little bit of that.
Or being stupid on the trampoline when you're a kid.
Yes, but, same here.
I kind of fell into that. And plus, I had to play the role. They thought that I was a wrestler, so they put me on the show. I couldn't make them think that, oh, you know, besides, you know, a little spot training here and there, you haven't been trained. I didn't want to tell them that. But
well, you know, you're no small guy. Exactly how tall are you and your weight and everything?
I'm 6'5", 285 right now.
And you're
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention that, yeah, you're 285, and somebody's like, damn, that's a big son of a bitch. You've lost, actually, a pretty good amount of weight and kind of slimmed down and trimmed down recently.
Yeah, I was up over the 3 bill mark, but back then I was, you know, 6'3", 6'4", you know, still had about an inch or so to grow and only about 215. So, yeah. You know, I was lanky.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Is there any kind of story heading into your match tonight, or is this just are y'all facing baby faces? What's the deal with your opponents tonight?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I find out when I get there. I saw the poster, but they really didn't elaborate on who was working who. I mean, I don't care as long as the show's good and, you know, everything goes well. But, you know, going back to getting started, just to let you know, that summer I did start training with Nick Rampage and Ray Gordy. Got to kind of learn under that learning tree, and Terry came over a couple times, and he didn't really get much to work. That was probably about the last year of his life, so it was awesome to be able to learn a little bit from him before he passed on, you know, only being a couple times. But then after about 3 months, then I started wrestling on a regular show, so don't think I just kept on going.
And you wrestle mostly around the southeast area. You wrestle, I've noticed, a lot in different areas in Tennessee, different areas in Georgia, and Alabama a lot recently. Right? Am I correct in that?
Yeah. And when I was younger and hungry and wanting to get out, as long as it wasn't interfering with school, I mean, I've been as far as Boston, Wisconsin, Chicago area, all the way out to West Texas, into Nevada. So, you know, I've kept the road tight, but, you know, that was...
Yeah, and you've done several dark matches for WWE as well.
Yeah, Cookie never crumbled the way I always wanted it to, but you know what? Hey, I was
They
there.
Say that is harder to get into WWE than it is to get into the NFL. So,
well, you think about it, you've got 3 million fans that watch the show on a regular basis on TV. You've got about 750,000 to a million guys working, and they're trying to fill 300 spots in the big-time federation. So it's kind of it's kind of hard to get through there. But, hey,
you know, I mean,
got invited to the dance, but it didn't stay long.
Well, it still is cool that you got invited to the dance. I mean, we're starting to see kind of an uprising with a lot of independents and maybe not so much independents by the time they're done with it. I mean, you got ROH running Madison Square Garden this April. And, I mean, you got New Japan, of course. They've been there for a while. Impact, you know, they're still hanging in there. They've got new owners. And then, of course, you got AEW coming up, which could be announcing a huge TV deal. So there's just so much opportunity out there. And not to mention, you know, like your local wrestling around town. I mean, Southern Honor, man, that was a great show. I went to it last week. I will be going back to another show as well.
Yeah, and, you know, it's when I first got in the business, it was the downfall of WCW and the downfall of ECW.
So it's almost a down period.
Right afterward. Yeah, and you couldn't make much of a living out on the independents, but now that it's grown so much in the past 20 years, it's kind of like it's back to the 70s and 80s where, you know, you can go and say, I've got a spot with Ring of Honor up in Philadelphia or something, and you're going to do there Saturday. We'll go ahead and get you some smaller shows on the way up there. Mm-hmm. To pay for the grands if they don't. And I mean, you have opportunity to make more money now than you ever have. I mean, look at Kenny Omega and what he's done.
And the Bucks as well, yeah. And they've never been a part of WWE. I think there is kind of a – it's going back to a territory days, but it's more of like a global thing now. Like everybody's trying to establish their own – You've got two or three strong companies in each country, it seems like. And it seems like WWE is now trying to put an NXT in Japan. They've already got one in UK, Mexico, soon to come. I mean, there's just so much opportunities out there. Like I said, I wish I would have got into the business a little bit. I've always wanted to get in the ring and wrestle one match. Whether it be just getting my ass kicked, being bumped around and shit. But, I mean, I'm sure your adrenaline pumps, too, before you get out of the match. And I'm sure you're pretty excited about the match tonight.
Yeah. You know, and when you get in, when you finally get in the ring, it's a hard thing to get your timing down because you'll be in there. When I was younger, I was all about making sure the moves got done well. And weren't hurt anybody, and I would go so quick at doing it because I think I needed to, but I really, you know, that's where a veteran comes in and says, hey, slow it down. You're not going as fast as you think you are. You don't have to go that fast. The crowd's not going to, you know, if you pause for a minute, they're not going to catch it. You're rushing through stuff, and you're not telling the story and taking time to sell it.
Right. That's a lost art form, I feel like, in indie wrestling, especially here lately. And WWE, too, really. Of the art of selling and like what you brought up last night on last night's podcast about the blind tag and you know the face finally getting that hot tag, but the referee didn't see it. He was distracted the whole time. You know, you don't see that a lot.
Still, I mean, if you go to a Southern show that's not, I mean, Southern Honor's, you know, good show, but they kind of do a little newer school mentality. But I guarantee you, if you put me and Brian in one of their matches and let us just go a little old school and get that hot tag and then go into your new school fast stuff, I guarantee you the crowd will still be into it.
Oh, absolutely. The anticipation for that hot tag, when they get in, they come in there and they clean house. I mean, yeah, I'd love to see the Outlaws against the Jungle Kings and Lynch Mob, which y'all probably faced the Jungle Kings.
I've faced them in singles before. I don't think I've ever faced them in a tag match. And that's the thing, you know, they like to do their thing a certain way. I like to do mine a certain way. But in this business, you can find a perfect middle ground for both of them.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. Use a little old school psychology, and then build into something where they go crazy at the end and do all these jumps and spots and stuff like that. But people are always just like, "Oh, I like it this way, or I like it that way." Oops.
Well, that's what's great. There's so many different styles, you know. I mean, everybody, you know, I like a little bit more of a style like you. I like that kind of slow pace, and I like the anticipation and the climax. I like a good story, like you were saying earlier. I thought Bret Hart was the best at telling stories in his matches back in the day. But
ridiculous.
But yeah, that's kind of my style of wrestling too. I mean, I like a good, for you know, somewhere in the middle of the card, I like a good spot fest here and there. That's fine. It gets the crowd up and everything, and that's a different style. But you know, as far as my main events, I want a good story told.
Yeah, if you tell the story and you sell, believe me, the crowd will get into it a lot more. Now, like you said, it just be a chameleon of where you're at. You're up north, do a little fast, but more fast-paced stuff. Get the crowd into it. Don't go into your rest holes and stuff like that. But if you're further down south, I mean, I was at a crowd one time in Burns, Tennessee. 400 people right on top of us. Mm-hmm. We went into an old spot. I was working Doug Gilbert, and I threw him off the ropes. I went under. He went up over me, crossed over, bounced off the ropes. We kept going back and forth on opposite ropes. He stopped, rode out of the ring, and got on the in the stands with the fans that were just watching me run. And I turned around, realized he was not running anymore, got mad. Crowd loved it. Just a hokey, goofy, cheesy spot. The crowd still loves to this day.
And that's what you mentioned they do a lot in, on house shows, and that's what's missing kind of for wrestling, is kind of interacting with the crowd a little bit more and not – worrying so much about the television product and telling the story through the television audience. Is that house shows, they kind of interact with the crowd more, and these independent shows, they interact with the crowd a lot more.
Yeah. But, you know, they got freedom with the house shows, but we were doing our matches and working out in front of wrestling a few matches in front of the agents and stuff. Would go into a tag team thing, and they'd go, you're disqualified. You've been in there 5 seconds. Don't come in and break up the count more than once. Or don't do the blind tag. Makes the ref look stupid. And then you would go and watch the show that night. Mm-hmm. Nobody's working the hard cam. They're in there for 10 or 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
you can get blown up wrestling that style too, where it's just go, 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 no selling. And it's like, within 5 minutes, you're blown up and you can't breathe.
Yeah,
I've seen it so many times, and a lot of independent matches I've seen it in, where these guys are just doing these Canadian destroyers or over and over and over and over again, and eventually it's just like they just get gas and they just both fall over.
And you've been in a WWE ring; it's 20 feet by 20, so anybody says they say 3 steps each time. It's a good 5 steps to go across that ring. And you see a lot of reversals. And the other day I saw two guys, it was on somebody's Facebook or something, they posted where they did all these moves and flips and spins and right in a row, boom, 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 and nobody ever sold. It was called
I saw that. That's what I was referring to. They kept doing those, I think that's a Canadian destroyer, where they do the flip, they jump on their back and they flip over. I don't know, but either way, they just kept on, and then eventually they just both just like tuckered out. They just both fell over.
Yeah, you know, and you also adapt to the way you feel too, because when I first got in the business, I could jump from the apron to the top rope, you know, like Van Damme used to do, and I could do a swanton and stuff like that. But then when you get age and poundage on you, it's kind of, you know, physics come into a factor there, and gravity takes over, and you know, 280 falls a lot faster than 220. so that's why I'm more of a grounder technician kind of thing. So
yeah, well, that, I mean, that's, yeah, I like that style. I'm a diehard Bret Hart fan, as you know. I catch hell for it on the page, but he is the best there is, the best there was, best there will be. But
and actually, he was accidentally the father of the Attitude Era. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't get a lot of credit.
He's the one that started.
Right, he didn't get a lot of credit in that. You got to think that 97 era really kind of started the Attitude Era, in my opinion, with the whole Hart Foundation against Stone Cold and the Americans and everything. Man, I think 97 was my favorite year to be a wrestling fan.
If Goldberg could have figured out how to pull a mule kick and not really hurt somebody.
Brett might be wrestling today here and there.
Yeah, just imagine the matches he would have had with Kurt Angle and The Rock. And people
Daniel
like
Bryant,
that.
Possibly, yeah. There's a ton of people, man. Yeah, well, I digress. all right, man, let's get to some road stories. You got any good road stories for us? Zach was kind of telling some here and there. He was jumping in there making the hot tag and kind of explaining some of the stories, but do you have a good road story for us?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you one where I don't know if you've ever heard of Chase Stevens. He wrestled for TNA. And
yeah, I've heard of
him. This was fought for WWE. Yeah, mm-hmm. And he was kind of – well, he still is. The independent Ric Flair. I mean
– yeah.
The dude can put down something. And when you go out with him, I mean, you're out and having a good time. And I remember we worked a show in Nashville. We drove up to West Virginia, and we were going to have one show in West Virginia and one show in the north part of West Virginia.
Right.
So we were staying overnight. I can't remember the town, but we got done, and he was like, "Where do you want to go?" And we went to a little shindig where they're having like a band, live band and stuff, and had a few. And the booker took us over to what their equivalent of Waffle House was across the street. You know, he gave us, bought us our meal, and we started to leave. And all of a sudden, there was this guy that, to me, just remembering him, he kind of looked like a cross between Hacksaw Jim Duggan and John Tenta, just a big old burly hillbilly laying out behind the bar, whatever they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it looked like he'd been beat up and thrown out. And I said, "Are you okay?" And he got up. Flipped the car, like, "Well, that's a big jerk," whatever. We got in the car, and as we drove off, Chase thought we were going to go down the road, so he flipped him off and said some stuff to him. And we didn't really go down the road. We went up the hill a block and took a ride into our hotel parking lot because I was following the booker because he had us room for the time.
Right.
Well, as I get out, I hear this voice, and I'm like, "Man, that guy follow us? He's running up the hill after us." So he comes up the hill, and I'm like, "What are you doing, man?" He's got his hands behind his back, and I remember looking up at the Jack Daniels sticking out of my road bag that this guy gave us, and I said, and I reached in there to get it, and I said, "What do you got in your hands?" And he was like, nothing, and he showed me his hands. So as I put the Jack Daniels bottle back in the bag, he hit me with everything he had.
Oh, shit.
And when he hit me, I knew he'd probably busted my face, and I just turned around and was really mad. It was like, you just screwed up, buddy. And I went after him, and he kept close to me, and I couldn't really get a good punch on him. And finally, I pushed him off, and I uppercutted him and knocked him completely out. And I was so mad, I picked my, you know, I always wore boots. I'm a country boy at heart, so that's why this gimmick's more of me anyway. So I started to pick my foot up, and I was almost going to do a Rollins curb stomp. I was so mad.
Oh.
Chase, we're done. And he goes to pick the guy up, and he goes, "Hey, man, you've gotten beat. You got whooped. Go on home. Get out of here." Well, he swings at Chase. Well, Chase is a Golden Glove, big boxer, and he knocked him back out. Well, at that time, we were so mad, we started putting the boots to him, and the girl that was with us come running over to stop us, and she tripped over his feet and knocked herself out on the concrete. So you had two people laying feet to feet in a V formation.
Yeah, and one was a female.
Yeah, and Chase goes, "What happened?" And I was like, "I don't know." He goes, "Let's go to the room." I'm like, "All right." So we just shut our door, grabbed our stuff, and walked in the room. And by that time, my teeth had went through my lip, so I was bleeding pretty good. And we go in, get our room. By the time we get up to the door, she had woke up and ran up there to be with us. Because I think it was Chase or somebody. I think it might have been the booker's friend or something. Because the booker was there in the parking lot watching all this go on. And so we go into our room, and I wash my mouth out with Jack Daniels, which was the only thing I had, which hurt. And so as I go to get ice, the dude is in the lobby. And he's telling the person at the desk that he got beat up by black people.
Oh.
And as we walk in the lobby, he goes, and there he is. And the guy goes, he's not black. What's wrong with you, man? Get out of here. And he had called, he said he'd called the police. The guy had. So as he goes outside and stumbles outside, we go back to our room, and the guy's apologizing to us that the dude was drunk. He didn't know that we'd gotten a fight earlier. And we go into our room, we pick the blind, put the blinds down, and the cops are surrounding this guy, and he gets whooped by the cops.
Oh.
And thrown. So four times he got his butt whooped that night within the span of about 30 minutes.
That just sounds like some karma, because the guy sounds like a total asshole.
Oh, he was, yeah, he was a jerk, man. And I was like, I've realized where hillbillies come from. It's West Virginia.
Damn, so this all happened in West Virginia. Mm. This yeah, guy, and this guy was the size of, you said this guy was like the size of John Tenta?
No, just the way he looked. I mean, he was probably close to my height, but he just,
well, you're pretty good dude, too.
He just had the build, you know, he was tubby, but in the face, he kind of looked like Hacksaw, and he had the hair and stuff. And,
oh, God. Yeah, I'm imagining a huge West Virginia redneck right now in my head.
Yeah, yeah. It was surreal, but, you know, I kept going back. I mean, that was a great run. I mean, going up through West Virginia and going into Pennsylvania and stuff. And,
Is that kind of a good wrestling territory? I've never really – I mean, I knew, you know, back in the day it was, but, I mean, hell – Chattanooga was a good wrestling territory back in the day. I mean,
yeah. Well, let's face it, Chattanooga's kind of got a little snobbish when it comes to wrestling and stuff now.
They have, haven't they? I've noticed that too. I still think there's a huge fan base there somewhere, but it's just like it's not. It is looked down upon more than it used to be.
Yeah, and they even brought Mick Foley into Comedy Catch at one time, and this past 2 months, I was trying to get Bruce and Conrad booked at the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga and talking back and forth with them. But
right, and I went to their Atlanta show last Saturday and had a blast. I did the VIP, got to meet Pritchard, got to meet Conrad. That is like my favorite podcast, man. Love that podcast.
Yeah, and they would not answer me back. I went up there two or three times when I was having shows, and I'd go through Chattanooga and say, hey, you know, they would cut a deal with you because – come out of Huntsville, and they just look at me like I'm stupid. I don't know if I finally just said, hey, Conrad, maybe you can contact him and he work something out. But
Conrad has mentioned Chattanooga several times on some of his other podcasts, like the Bischoff podcast, and I know he has on Pritchard's and Schiavone's. And then, you know, I've heard Pritchard mention Chattanooga, so it's not like it's not on their radar. They have ran big events out of the Roundhouse before, and it's like, man, if we could just get a Raw at the Roundhouse, I think that could attract Conrad since he's just in Huntsville, you know?
Yeah, they used to come over there all the time, but let me tell you a little funny story about Conrad.
Oh, great, this is awesome, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it's kind of a connection with Paul Lee. I remember when I was working for Paul a few years back, he always got contacted by a guy in North Alabama, and he was a big collector, and he would pay for Paul to come out, and they would hang out, and they would, I guess, trade stuff. Well, Paul started booking Flair quite a bit.
Right. I remember that.
And, yeah.
Back in 2011?
Flair would come in. Yeah, and he would come in, and he would hang out with us, and, you know, would buy us around, go out. You know, he was just, yeah, he's always been a nice guy. But during that time, Flair went over there in North Alabama with Paul, and thus started the Flair thing.
That is insane.
All that stuff.
That is totally insane. So Paul Lee is the key between Conrad and Pritchard meeting, and they didn't they do a special podcast in Alabama somewhere last year where it was like Jimmy Hart, Conrad, Paul Lee, and Ric Flair.
Yeah, they did it wasn't a podcast. It was more just like they had a show. And
an interview segment. Yeah.
And, you know, Paul didn't help him meet Pritchard, but if he hadn't brought Flair over there and all that stuff, you know, who'd have known that would ever happen?
Right. But now he went on to do Ric Flair's podcast. He's married to Ric Flair's daughter, and now he's got the number one wrestling podcast in the world.
Yep. But never mentions Paul.
Why? Yeah, that is weird. You don't really ever hear him talk about Paul. Speaking of Paul, let's address the AWF I guess I wouldn't call it controversy. I know you quit working for him. Could you tell us the reason behind that?
Well, it's just, I mean, like I said last night, I don't have anything ever personal against Paul or his family. I mean, I've always thought of him as family. People always give him crap, but hey, you keep talking about him, he's going to keep making money. So.
Oh, Paul's a local legend, in my opinion. I mean, Paul's a local legend. Go ahead.
Yeah. The worst thing you can do with a wrestler is not book him or not talk about him. Well, guess what? A lot of people still talk about him, so no matter whether they like him or not. And I was going through a dark time in my life, and he came and got me off the couch and took me out to dinner and got me, you know, and helped and just showed a friendship that I can't say for a lot of people that I knew in the business that just didn't want to hang out with me anymore because, you know, so I can never say anything bad personally about Paul, but, you know, he's had a difference of vision and business, and I had other opportunities, and I just went my way, and he went his, but, I mean, who's to say I'm not ever going to say I won't go back, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, you got Wrestle Jam coming up with Mick Foley. I'll probably be at that show.
All he's got to do is call us, and hey, we've got some outlaws that'll come out there. Outlaw Justice, but you know,
I love the gimmick. I love the outlaw gimmick. It's just it's a kind of an old school gimmick too that I enjoy about it. And y'all's style, I've seen your style before. It's if I'm explaining to listeners, and I'll let you do a little brief description of it, but I kind of look at him like the Revival or Brainbusters, kind of an old school drag you in the corner, work over a body part or work you over, do whatever they can to win mentality. Would that be kind of an accurate description?
Yeah, when we first started it, you know, Brian has always been, and then one time they had him being like, looked at that part. And I always said that, you know, we ought to do some kind of thing like Dick and Dusty and Barry and Dustin or the Blackjacks and like Arn and Tully, where you just, you know, you don't get that anymore. These guys, I love the Revival, man. I think they're underutilized.
I do too.
They harken back to the old days.
I do too. I'd love to see them put the belts on them and give them a nice long run.
Yeah. Well, they better or they're going to go to AEW. So.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy their work. You know, there's a lot of teams that aren't being utilized real good in WWE right now. But we could talk about that all day. As a matter of fact, I was going to come out and say on this podcast, man, you and Zach got great chemistry. I think you and Zach need your own podcast.
Well, I think I've known him for so long, I know how to take him, and I feed off whatever he says. I've known him since he was 8 years old, so...
I grew up.
He's the same stack he was, just a four-letter adjective.
Well,
he likes to throw in there now.
He's got his fan base on the page, man. He likes putting up his promo videos and stuff like that. Zach is a huge fan. You always see the action figures in the background. Just a giant wrestling fan.
Well, you ought to ask him about how many times I used to put him in wrestling holds and moves when we were in elementary school. So he was. I think a lot of my friends were glad that I actually went into wrestling, so I'd stop doing that to them. So
that's cool. That's cool. Hey, before we go, man, I got to know, who's the worst talent you've ever had to work with? I mean, it can be Joe Schmo, famous wrestler, whoever. I want to know. You told me last night, but I'm playing dumb for our new audience.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Well,
and
I would say, I mean, you always go in, and there is – enough market in this business for all kinds of people that can talk that can't work, people that can work that can't talk, you know. And but sometimes when you're there in the heart of it, you're young, you're just like, what in the world are these guys getting these pushes? And TNA was running in Nashville at the fairgrounds, and Burt Prentice was running his show out of their same building and putting his product on TV around the southeast. And I went up there to work, and they kept putting in, you know, he's a sweetheart of a guy, he just wasn't what I guess they thought he was going to be, but he had the build of a Lex Luger, left-handed, which was hard to.
No, always the body. When promoters see the body and the look, man, that can carry you pretty far. But once the bell rings, that's another story.
Bruce always says, when the bell rang. His name was Rex Sexton, and I worked about a 2 or 3 match angle with him on their television there, and then I never saw him again.
Huh. Well, he figured out that night, or maybe a couple weeks later, he's like, you know what, this is not for me.
Yeah. But I will tell you, that was a fun night, because first time I ever met Jim Cornette, he introduced himself twice to me.
And didn't he manage you at a Wrestle Jam show? Am I correct on that?
Yeah. And I did not realize that until after we were out there, and I looked over, because I didn't know he was hanging out with Paul, and I just knew what we were doing in the match, and I got Mike Jackson in the ring, and I looked over and went, Jim Cornette is managing us, and nobody's using him.
Such a Cornette fan.
Yeah, huge Cornette fan. So I set him over on the ropes and let him have that mic. But that night, the first night I met him, he came up, and that time I was going as Jason Phoenix. And he came up and said, "Hi, Jim Cornette." And I was in my regular clothes, and I said, "Hi, Jason Phoenix." 10 minutes later, after I got my clothes back on, he was like, or my trunks and stuff, he was like,
"Yeah,
hey, Jim Cornette." I said, "Hey, you still Jason Phoenix?" And he just looked at me funny. I don't know if he got the joke, but he introduced himself twice to me.
Man, I like him. His podcast is kind of funny, too. But yeah, I would consider him. I would have Heenan maybe first. Heenan's just so witty, but I don't know. It's close. Heenan, Heyman, Cornette, any of those three could be my number one.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, there's so many good managers out there that I've seen on the independent circuit that don't get.
That seems to be the only place they're still big at. You know what?
They've lost. Yeah, it's a lost art. I mean, I worked with a guy for a couple of years out of Alabama called Howard C. Cross, and he was always on time, always there when you needed him, and what spot you called. He never missed anything. He was just great with the crowd. I mean, it was awesome. And he never got his opportunity because he was a manager.
Man, that sucks. Because, I mean, we could always use a little bit more managers, I feel. That's what I kind of miss most about the past is the Heenan days and J.J. Dillon and guys like that. Hell, even Jimmy Hart, I always wanted to see him get his little ass whipped. Hey, Jason, I'm gonna thank you for joining us, man. I know you're heading to the show right now. Go ahead and plug any of your stuff you got coming up, and we'll be doing a podcast with you very soon. Definitely one with Bell. We got to get back on that.
Okay, that sounds good to me, man. But yeah, keep a lookout on it on Facebook. We've got Coast to Coast Championship Wrestling. It's coming to Moody, Alabama at the Civic Center there, April 6th, bell time, 7 o'clock. We are going to have a meet and greet 5:30 for all the fans to meet the wrestlers and stuff like that, trying to get something started down there. Seems like it's got a good word of mouth going, so we'll see what we can do.
Awesome, dude. I appreciate it, and we'll see you on the podcast pretty soon.
All right, just let me know.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye. Man. All right, guys, that's about all the time we have for the podcast this week. I want to thank JP Magnum, the outlaw, out there burning up the roads between
RCW fans, this is Josh Minshew. Just wanted to give my thoughts on this weekend's show, because this Saturday night, Renegade Championship Wrestling presents Wrestleversary 14, their 14th anniversary show at the RCW Arena in Chatsworth, Georgia. Great, great lineup of matches. Starting the night off with an over-the-top rope invitational battle royal. The winner of that battle royal will receive a number one contendership for an RCW championship of their choosing. It's an open invitational, which means anybody can enter this thing. Anybody from RCW's past, anybody on the current roster. It may be somebody who's never stepped foot in the RCW arena before. Don't know who's going to be in it. I do know one person, though, and that's Brent Banner. I saw his video earlier. He's announced his entering the Battle Royal, so I'm going to go out on a limb and make my prediction here. Not Brent, but his tag team partner in Generation Iron, Titan, to win the over-the-top rope invitation of Battle Royal and using his number one contendership, not for the heavyweight championship or the No Limits championship, but for himself and Brent Banner to challenge for the RCW Tag Team Championships. And speaking of those Tag Team Championships, the Tag Team Champions Helter Skelter are going to be in an 8-man elimination tag team matchup. That's Helter Skelter, Sean Bell, Aiden Wright, Brad Spurlock, and Robert Starr. And they're going to be taking on the team of Joey Idol, Mike Clay, Zach Malone, and Josh Vaughn. 4-on-4, elimination style is the key, though. Who can get the early advantage? If you can get it, this match could potentially wind up being a 4-on-1, either for Helter Skelter or for Joey Idol's team. When you're faced with a decision like this, you side with the champions. I pick Helter Skelter to win this matchup, and we'll go with Aiden Wright and Brad Spurlock to make it to the end and be the victors in this matchup. Then that brings you to the ladder match for the RCW No Limits Championship. This was a 4-way match, but they've announced that they're adding 2 more competitors to this matchup. So you now have the Upgrade Mikey Watkins, T.Y. Sutton, the Samoan Psychopath Dion Mercer, Matt Lynch, and Nate Wilde, all going against the world's greatest athlete, Johnny Viper, the defending No Limits Champion. The champion's advantage I spoke of about in the previous match doesn't apply here because there are 5 other men competing in this matchup. This one is a toss-up. It's anybody's game, but if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with Mikey Watkins. He had the championship. He lost it in an upset in his first defense against Johnny Viper. Mikey Watkins, out for revenge, wins the matchup and the RCW No Limits Championship. Then you have a steel cage loser leaves RCW match. CJ Holloway versus Charles Allen. Both men have held RCW championship gold in the past year. Charles Allen won the best of the best tournament. CJ Holloway, of course, the self-proclaimed No Damn Limits champion, lost his title to the aforementioned Mikey Watkins. This matchup, CJ or Charles Allen are going home. I'm going fear and air. I'm picking CJ Holloway. Bye-bye, Charles Allen. And then your main event, a steel cage matchup for the RCW Heavyweight Championship. Michael Cross defends his championship against Shane Williams. This matchup will be brutal. There is no way to state that enough. You can't state that clearly enough. I would almost guarantee blood with those two. I have seen what Michael Cross can do. I have seen what Shane Williams can do. I've been on the receiving end of punishment from both of these guys in the past. Let's not get into that, but it's there. Michael Cross defends against Shane Williams. Shane Williams has guaranteed that Michael Cross will not leave the cage with the RCW Heavyweight Championship. Shane Williams out for revenge. Michael Cross the champion. Who wins it? This one is too close to call for me. I can't make a call on this one, but it's going to be a great, great matchup. I may just have to go see it myself because I want to see this match. The rest of the card is amazing, but the chance to see Michael Cross against Shane Williams in a steel cage and adding the RCW Heavyweight Championship, this is going to be one that you don't want to miss. Tickets $10. Kids 5 to 10 are $5. 4 and under are free. Get there early. Get a good seat. It's going to be a great, great night. Bell time is 8 o'clock. Get there early. Visit the concession stand. Address is 806 North 2nd Avenue in Chatsworth, Georgia. The RCW Arena this Saturday night, July 27th. WrestleVersary 14. Be there.